Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo broadcasting to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska, and we are going to be talking Going Out Green. My guest today is Bob Butts, and this man has such a wonderful sense of humor about a topic that typically most of us shy away from discussing. What is that? Well, it's planning for our own funeral. Yes. And this is where Bob's subject matter, Going Out Green, is really special. It's all about his adventure in research, in finding out what you need to do, but doing it green. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you.
I really got a kick out of your book because you made a statement right at the very beginning, and I'm going to quote it directly, where you said, "Death like politics is a real downer of a conversation topic, even if you do have something interesting to say."
That's true.
I really think that that is so true. Why do you think that culturally this is very difficult for most people to talk about, to be able to say, gee whiz, this is something that I want to discuss? Do you think there's superstition behind it? What is it that you've discovered in your involvement and research regarding the facts about burial?
Well, I found with my age group, I'm 38 years old, so bringing this up at a party with friends of mine was kind of more of a shock than anything, because people, especially my age, aren't supposed to be thinking about this yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, as a whole, and I go back to that in my book a lot, and through the process of writing it, I spoke with a lot of folks involved with green burial and home funerals, and it was real refreshing to talk to them about this. And I just kept going back to the fact. And at times I will say that it was even sort of fun. But we just don't think of death as being a thing that we want to deal with as a culture, which I think, unfortunately, we miss out on the goodness that could and does come out of some funerals, especially ones that are done in this way, which fall under the banner of green burial.
Well, now green burial—that is sort of a new catchy phrase that has evolved. I remember watching a program about green burials that was actually quite well done, about mm-hmm. an organization that this is what they're dedicated to, and so forth. And I had to chuckle to myself when I was watching it on television. I thought, this really is nothing new. Why
oh, no.
is it this has been such a hot thing? But what amazed me in your book, because in our time today, we are becoming so much more consciously present with the fact that we are using chemicals and all kinds of things that are affecting our environment, affecting our wellness, affecting the animals and insects and other things that we share this planet with. And I just wanted to share some of these numbers. They just absolutely blew me away, and it was compiled by Mary Woodson, a Cornell University science writer and a VP of the Pre-Posthumous Society of Ithaca, New York. America's 22,500 cemeteries annually bury approximately, now this is what goes into the earth, folks,
mm-hmm.
827,060 gallons of embalming fluid, which includes formaldehyde, 180,000, yeah, right, 180,544 million pounds of copper and bronze, that's from the caskets, 30 million board of feet of hardwoods, including exotic woods in caskets, 3,272 million pounds of reinforced concrete vaults, 28 million pounds of steel in vaults. I mean, I read these numbers and I went, gee whiz, if the environmentalists ever hit the cemetery.
Well, and they say just in the vaults, the concrete vaults alone, there's they bury enough concrete to build a road from New York to Detroit once a year.
Oh my goodness!
Quite some, and that puts it in gives you a visual of how much that is.
Yes, and you see in here the annual casket consumption in America, just in America, winds up burying up enough metal in the ground to build and rebuild the Golden Gate Bridge every year. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that if anybody's ever traveled over to the Golden Gate Bridge, that is an awesome structure. Every year you could build a Golden Gate Bridge. This is an incredible business. Of course, they'll never go out of business. I mean, they're always going to have customers. And I realize that that's being a little snide there, but that's true. Now, you also said that the average cost of a burial is
$7,500.
And that doesn't include the account cemetery, monument, marker costs, miscellaneous cash advance items such as flowers and obituaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've known people that minimally it was $10,000, and then it went up from there.
Oh, that price has since gone up. I think that figure was from 2002.
Oh, my goodness.
I believe. But that was the earliest one that I could find. But in talking to people since the book has come out, I talked to one woman about a month ago that said she paid $6,000. But most of the time it was between $10,000 and $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time the people who... were left to take care of that. If the funerals were not pre-planned, which a few of them were, and a few of the folks I talked to did not have a pre-planned sort of arrangement, they put it on a credit card, and it's staggering, because that is more than I believe I paid for my first year of college. So quite a bit of money.
Okay, Bob, let me ask you a question. You're a young man. What got you interested in doing research on this? Because as you said right at the beginning of the show, this isn't something most of us that are going to jump up and down and say, oh, I want to talk about the funeral I'm going to have when I die. I mean, this is not something that is conversation and a green funeral. What got you interested in this?
Two things. I mean, one it was an assignment, and with my writing, I've always been drawn to sort of fringe ideas, which this is right now. It's sort of a fringe movement, so that sort of intrigued me. I was asked if I would be interested in doing a book on this, and at first I didn't know what it was. But I looked into it, and I thought, that's very interesting. And the more I thought about it, I've seen funerals, of course, as we all have. I've seen more than my fair share on my short time on this earth. And they all left me with a feeling that there was something wrong with them. And there was something wrong. The one that comes to mind, the one I write about in my book, is my father, who died when he was 35. And I was 11, and seeing how that played out, I made up my mind as a young man that I did not want to go out in that same way. So I didn't know this going into it, but I was into green burials before I knew there was a term for it. So it just seemed like a natural fit for me to do this book. And then the more I got into it, the people who I met who are involved in this were all so passionate about this topic, and that passion worked well for my narrative that I drew up in this book.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this book is great for Halloween. I really do. I mean, you've
got
some
sexist.
I mean,
I had a few people call me and tell me that they were going to give the book as a gift, and I didn't really know how to take that.
Well, I'll tell you, your section on the principles and practices of embalming. I just said, oh my goodness, this is so funny. The green is the first color of being dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about 1 to 3 days. I mean, anybody for Halloween, if you really wanted to gross somebody out, you could do this. Greenish discoloration of the abdominal wall, odor of putrefaction is noticeable, the eyeballs become soft. I mean, kids would just love this.
Three
to 5 days, green patches begin to appear on various parts of the body, and then there might be a frothy purge of pores from the mouth. 8 to 10 days, green discoloration is general over the entire body. 14 to 20 days, the corpse, including its extremities, becomes blistered and swollen. Hair and nails are loose and easily detached. 1 to 6 months, accumulated gases internally. Cranial bones reach a point of decay that allows the brain to escape. Any identifiable features of the body are lost. Yes, it sounds like a horror film of Halloween 552. This is really something. And like you said, it's about as cheery as a grocery list, but it's worse than that as far as I'm concerned. But really, this is something that a lot of people have not had any experience with. Now, soldiers out in the field, soldiers that were in Vietnam, they would saw this kind of deterioration happen even more rapidly because of humidity. And you bring up how the Civil War.
Yes.
Really, what was the impact of the Civil War? Because there were masses. How many people? Was it over 600,000?
Oh yes.
Americans on both sides
right on
died,
yeah.
And so you had this massive amount of bodies all over the place. How did the situation with burial evolve in the United States to the degree that it is today, with the business that it is?
Well, prior to the Civil War, most burials in America were what you would now call green. But during the Civil War, most of the battles were fought in summertime, and when the train cars would ship the bodies home, people were met by train cars that were basically stinking, sweltering in the heat. They had to come up with a way to send these loved ones home, and that was when embalming first began to catch on. But it wasn't until Abe Lincoln was assassinated in 1865, and his body was carried home by train to Illinois, and Lincoln's body was embalmed, and it made stops. The train made stops on the way back to his home, and people got a chance to see him. And at that point in the U.S., thoughts about embalming, which prior to that, embalming was viewed as a desecration to the body. But throughout the Civil War, and then with Lincoln's, he was on the paper, he was in papers, he was seen by millions of people, and the attitudes once past 1865 began to change, and embalming became more and more common. And it has grown, the industry has grown to what it is today.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at history, there were different cultures like the Egyptians that had a type of embalming that, because they were in a desert area, those mummies, as we call them today, have given us something about history that we otherwise would not have had. We've also been able to find out, because of the mummies that were found, about the diseases and the various things that affected their everyday lives and the average age of the people when they were buried, etc. And we have done that today, but now we've reached a point where in many, many parts of the country that the cemeteries are really overloaded.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any extra space. I know in certain countries in the world, they're only allowed to put a loved one in for a certain period of time, and then that loved one is out of there.
Right.
So,
well, there was just a piece in the paper online a few months ago about the cemeteries in Great Britain. They're having to exhume bodies to dig graves deeper so that they can stack more on top. And that same thing is going on here, especially in some of the military military cemeteries here in the biggest one that comes to mind is down in Arlington. They expect to run out of room there in the next 10 to 15 years if things go as they are.
Now let's talk about Fox Field. This is the first official green burial preserve, which just amazes me the way we use words today. But it's a nonprofit land trust organization, and it's called the Wilderness Center.
Now, that this is the first one owned by a conservancy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and that's the one in Ohio.
Okay, in Ohio, and there's 600 acres there. And it's in Amish farm country.
Sure,
and
in Stark County.
Yes, and so there you have this situation. Now, they came about why?
Well, they came about because there was an interest in this. There are, I believe right now, there are about 15 these burial preserves, which are more or less like nature preserves. There are about 15 of those in the U.S. right now. The nearest one to my home is this Fox Field Preserve in Ohio. So I did drive down there during the course of writing the book and got a chance to tour this place, and it was quite nice. It was quite beautiful.
Well, one of the things too is you bring out a lot of the myths that have been perpetuated over the years regarding burials. In fact, it was in 1665 in England during the Great Plague, there was a law that was enacted under the belief that burying bodies 6 feet deep would prevent the spread of the disease.
Right.
They didn't have a clue about what was going on. And they don't bury them that deep today, do they?
Not at the natural preserves, no. The cemeteries that do that, and it is primarily to accommodate the concrete vault and casket. For my book, I talked to a man who dug graves his whole life, and he dug them by hand up until 1994, I believe, and now digs them with a backhoe and things. But they still dig six feet deep in some places. Now at a preserve like Fox Field, it's typically no more than 3 to 3.5 feet deep. Once you get more than 4 feet, is out of it's a carcass decay zone. You're sort of out of you're in the anaerobic zone. You need air to decompose a body, and if you get down below the topsoil, there's no air, and it doesn't. So, for lack of a better term, you're composting yourself, and which is the goal with green burial. If you go deeper than 3.5-4 feet, that's impossible.
You bring out a fact regarding some livestock that was tested. The carcasses buried 4 feet underground showed that all the soft tissue associated with a 1,000-pound carcass were fully decomposed within 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, gone.
And, you know, it's 8 to 10 months in cold weather.
Sure.
But there are all of these life forms that will, you know, that feed on the carcass. And that is, let's face it, we're of the animal kingdom. That's what we are when we die. There is that carcass.
Sure.
And there's this feeling that has been perpetuated that many people have said, I really don't want to be bothered, just with the numbers that we discussed at the beginning. They really don't want to be bothered with this tremendous expense. They don't want their families to have to pay out $10,000, $16,000, $20,000 for a funeral, memorial service, and all of this. So the option a lot of people are going into is cremation.
Sure.
So what with the cremation, what was it that you found out with that, and what's the average cost? Because, you know, a lot of people have an attitude, when I'm gone, what difference does it make? Let's just go ahead and give you the money and leave me alone. Now, I know there are
sure.
those people who don't feel that way. But what
well,
is the average cost for a cremation?
Well, in each state it's different. I mean, in my state here in Michigan, you can get a direct cremation done for about $800, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it as low as $600, and some states as low as $400. But that is no service, of course. That's just right from the hospital bed to the oven.
Mm-hmm.
The fast answer to everybody would ask me during the course of doing the book, what about cremation? Quick answer is that as far as is it green or not? The way it's done now, the quick answer is no, because it uses so much energy. It takes so much to burn a body. Those ovens heat to 1600 degrees and produce as much CO2 as a family of four might produce in a week. They require enough gas, some of them, that you could drive across the country with how much energy it takes to cremate a body. However, oh, and then you also have people who are cremated. Sometimes are embalmed first, so there.
Oh, good Lord!
There can be a viewing. So when you go through the cremation process, there's a fear among some that the formaldehyde fumes
mm-hmm.
go right up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
So when people would ask me, "Is cremation green?" The quick answer would be was no, but I always felt like that was environmental nitpicking, because it is a once and done deal. Whereas if you go through a conventional funeral, the things that you put into the ground are there more or less forever. You're taking up land, you're burying metal, you're burying concrete, so on and so forth. Cremation, again, is a once and done deal, but it's not technically considered the greenest way to go.
Also, some information that you have in your book, which I found extremely interesting, this had never even crossed my mind, that there is in Michigan, just in Michigan alone, a Funeral Directors Association. Now, this association was founded in 1860. It's the mm-hmm. oldest group of its kind in the U.S., and it's got 1,300 members approximately, and it has tremendous lobbying power. You know,
mm-hmm.
when we hear of all the political statements, we think of corporations, but how many people would think of morticians?
Right.
Didn't
well, I think I pointed out in the book the year that I could find contributions to politicians in this state, they had donated more than Anheuser-Busch, which was quite shocking to me.
Wow. Well, and then you said that there's some figures in here that, and I'm quoting, it doesn't take an expert to see that the new state laws go a long way to help beef up the bottom line of a national industry, meaning the funeral industry. Figures mm-hmm. from the National Funeral Directors Association say nearly 22,000 funeral homes generate $11 billion annually.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice amount of pocket change.
Sure. And it's also partly, I mean, there is money there, of course. It is an industry. But there's also an indifference from our public. A lot of these things, you know, in the face of it, what they say spend in Michigan is not that much. But when you have a group who can, you know, they can lobby to have laws passed and things like that, and there is no opposition to what they want,
mm-hmm.
because there's so much indifference. That, I think, goes a lot further than money does. It does
because
that most folks have toward this
mm-hmm.
topic.
Well, when you think about what you have found in the amount of metals, concrete, mm-hmm. formaldehyde, these are things that for most of us, that wouldn't even cross our realm of thinking. It wouldn't. It's just
no.
like, well, you die, you just go to a mortician, you just take care of things, and that's it. You know, that's all that you have to do. But it's something that, for those of you who are listening today, it is something worth becoming a little educated about. One, it is a cost factor. Two, how do you want to, let's say, leave a legacy? What is it that you want to do with it? Now, you may want to be like Liberace and have a whole bunch of pianos or something. I don't know. I'm being a little facetious there. But, I mean, there's people that have been buried with their guitars and all kinds of things, which isn't unusual. There's been cultural things that go back thousands and thousands of years where people have done that. But the reality is that in today's world, that is something that is so, when somebody does lose a loved one, it is very, very hard. There are decisions that have to be made, and if you don't pre-plan, then you could end up with a bill that is just going to be amazing. So,
and the bill is just one part of it. Also, I mean, there's taking an active role in your death, and the ritual that is involved in that, and also this is about reclaiming a ritual that has been lost to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the book not only instructs, but it is a fun read. I think it shows that this topic does not have to be grim and dour. And
right.
I also in the book talk a lot about the fact that this is a ritual that should be reclaimed by people, because for so long this was the providence of families, and
mm-hmm.
and now it is not. We homeschool our kids. We take care of our loved ones, you know, in time of sickness. But in death, something happens. There's this wall that is hit, and we just turn the bodies of our loved ones over to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the book is about reclaiming that ritual, and how it can not just save you money, but it can also enrich your life.
Well, and I think it enables closure too, and that
something.
Funerals are for the living, because
exactly.
the one that's passed on doesn't give a hoot one way or the other.
Exactly.
And it's, I'm being a little sarcastic, but that's the truth. I mean, they're not here. So we want to pay our respects. And in many ways, there have been rituals with different cultures over the years where there would be an acknowledgement of that person, and then that would be the finality of it. And that's what I think memorial services are for, or whatever someone, a family wants to do. It is all up to the individual. But I think your book, Going Out Green, One Man's Adventure of Planning His Own Burial, is so informational, but more than that, it makes us aware of different cultures. It makes us aware of the Native Americans and how they did things. And there's just this importance of understanding that really this is a very significant part of our planning that we need to do, so that it's easier for the family and that we can feel like we have done our job for them. Because in a lot of states, if you don't have your will made out, if you don't have things in order, it is just awful what the families have to go through.
It is.
It's just terrible. It's terrible. So I really think your book is just terrific. Bob, do you have a website for people that they can go to?
I do. Thank you. It's bobbutz.com, and that's BUTZ, bobbutz.com. Well,
Bob,
can go there,
you've been
find out more about what I do and also about this book. So I appreciate the time today.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I'll say something. This is the right time of year to talk about this because it fits right in, you know, with Halloween and all the ghoulish things that people talk about. But really, it is something that I think is quite an accomplishment, and I wish you well with this. And I think the more people that think along the lines and look at what options they have and what they can consider, really, I think it's a good thing to do. And then once you plan it out, you say, well, that's it. I don't have to worry about it anymore. The right people know what I want done, and that's it. And then you live life with zest.
Exactly.
Bob, thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
So much. This has been a delight. This is Donna. Remember, Going Out Green by Bob Butz. His website is bobbutz.com, B-U-T-Z. The subject matter, again, not often discussed, but we do just about everything here except religion and politics on the Donna Sebo Show, and this is a unique one, but really one worth being informed about. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm broadcasting to you from magnificently beautiful Fairbanks, Alaska. When I flew in today, this has been quite a fascinating day because to get the flight to come in, of course, to arrive here so that I would be able to do the show live from Sophie Station, I just love coming in this time of the year, and frequently there's snow on the ground. Not now. The temperatures here are just as warm and comfortable as they are in the Pacific Northwest, and it is just amazing. The people in Fairbanks are thrilled, and of course I know this is a holiday for a lot of you, being Columbus Day, but they are just absolutely out in the sunshine and basking in it. Apparently we're going to have beautiful weather here while I'm here in town, which is marvelous, because so often when I come up this time of the year, there's already snow on the ground, the trees are totally bare, But when we flew in, there was this golden yellow canopy that you just fly over. It's breathtakingly beautiful. So being in Alaska this time of the year is absolutely magnificently magical. Okay, hey, telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756, and through the magic of technology and Don, the engineer in the studio, putting us all together, this show goes on live no matter where I am. So again, 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or initial, and of course I love to know where you're calling in from, and then just sit back, relax, and let me tell you what I perceive, and then after that you can ask me a question about anyone or anything that you like. So 888-815-9756. Now I'm going to be broadcasting live from Alaska this entire week, and I want to let you know who's going to be on the air with me tomorrow. Gary Spinell in Texas. He says, his book says, It Was You All Along. Now Gary has walked a journey in life that has taught him many things, and this book is about this journey, what he discovered, and how we can empower ourselves as individuals. So that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. And then Lisa Sherwin, we're going to be talking with her, and I loved her topic, so many shoes, so little money. Well, how can shoes and money have value? We're going to find out on Wednesday. And then raw for dessert, Jennifer Kornblit is going to be my guest. And for those of you who are always wondering, how can you satisfy that sweet tooth and do it healthy? Well, I'm a firm believer in chocolate myself. However, there are so many wonderful recipes that she has put together, and they're all freshly done. So I think you'll enjoy it. Have those pads of paper and pens handy so you can write it all down. And then Chuck Aulino is going to be my guest on Friday, lesser-known giants of the 20th century. He researched a number of people who had a phenomenal impact on the United States in each of their respective areas. And the information is absolutely wonderful to read. It is just amazing what he was able to discover. So we have a fascinating lineup of people this week. And even though I'm in Alaska, we're going to have them all live on the air, and it's all coming to you due to, again, the wonders of technology. By the way, since Halloween is coming up, I came across some information that I thought would just be so good. How would you like yummy, gummy popcorn? Well, I know the kids would go bonkers over. They just would love it. But if you're a person that's putting on a party, I wanted to share some recipes with you. So have that pad of paper and pen handy, and with the time available today, then I will share some recipes for a Halloween. I just love people's innovation and imagination. They come up with all kinds of wonderful, wonderful ideas that are so imaginative and yet give that creative flair that with food for a party, people will think you had spent hours and hours and hours putting all of this together. Halloween is a fun event, and I know we have friends that usually put on a very large party every year. The wife designs costumes, and she has all kinds of things that she manages to put together, and she has friends that come into it with her, and they say, oh, let me bring some of my ghoulish things. We just have a lot of fun. It's just really a lot of fun, and I think anytime you can make up costumes and come up with original ideas, it's just fun. And that is, for me, what Halloween has always been. It's always been one of my favorite holidays, especially as a kid growing up. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756 if you would like to chat. I wanted to share with you a beautiful poem because it just relates so strongly to what I was seeing on the flight up to Alaska. The geese honk their goodbyes, winging their way homeward on an early autumn breeze. Muriel Walters made that comment, and I think the photograph that went along with it is just breathtakingly gorgeous. Had to have been taken on the East Coast somewhere, and I'd gotten an email from someone that said that the Blue Ridge Mountains, of course, this time of the year, they are spectacularly gorgeous. All of the vivid fall colors are out, and it's as if Mother Nature is strutting her stuff in a way that you would never, ever thought would be possible, and it is gloriously, gloriously beautiful. So anyway, that was something that Muriel wanted to share, and I really appreciate what she wrote. And those geese, yes, they are migrating. We've got a lot of birds that have been going through our backyard in the Pacific Northwest, some of them woodpeckers. And in our backyard, often we see four or five different species of woodpeckers, and they migrate through in the spring, and then they migrate back through again in the fall months. I wanted to share some information with you about our food supply. Now, gene vaults, have you ever heard of them? Well, they're seed vaults. And these are, there's a more than one vault, but this one in particular that I got some information on, they are with the International Rice Research Institute, the IRRI. And they work along with the University of California and a number of other organizations. Starving people is a very significant issue. In many parts of the world, floods come in to such a degree that it's just incredible. People will have crops, the floods will wipe everything out, the people end up starving. In our world today, we are so accustomed to just, especially in America, just walking into a grocery store and having just almost anything and everything available to us. We don't realize that it wouldn't take much to lose our food supply. And it's something that we have to be aware of. America has been the breadbasket for the world on many, many occasions. And in Southeast Asia, this information I came across, farmers who are in the flood-prone areas lose millions of tons of rice. China has gone through this many, many times, through centuries and centuries. And the waste that is the result of the flooding, because it drowns the plant, they believe they're going to be able to develop something that will survive the intense floods. There are rice plants they've discovered that carry a gene that allow the plant to survive totally submerged in water for up to 2 weeks. And this flood-resistant rice turned up among 110,000 types of seed that have been stored at the Institute. Now, they said the yields were disappointing, but the scientists found they could transfer the gene into more bountiful varieties. And people in India and Bangladesh have been working with this genetic alteration for the past 2 years. Now, they said this could not have been possible without the genetic diversity that's tucked away in this vault. The world today faces brand new agricultural challenges. Why? Some things are changing with the climate. Bugs of all kinds and different diseases have developed resistance. We've got superbugs today. We have blights that just aren't touched by any of the pesticides that we have used. So these old seeds, these have genetic resources that we might find very, very valuable. Now, there are over 1,000 organizations around the world, including the USDA, the International Potato Center in Peru, the Millennium Seed Bank in the UK, and the Svalbard Global Seed Vault in Norway. They catalog and they preserve crop genes. Now, most of the species that we grow for food today have an associated bank that stores thousands of samples, just all kinds of samples of seeds. Even varieties that are rare, very old, or adapted to specific environments. So these banks, these seed banks around the world are just serving us in a very, very special way. Now, the reason that the need developed for these botanical libraries, as they're often called, is because of modern agricultural practices. The practices that have been done for so long have really whittled down the vibrant mix of plants to a very, very narrow collection. Now, I've got some more information about this from the UN. So when we come back from a break, then I'll be sure to tell you more about it. Also, You're going to have a chance to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756, if you would like to chat with me. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I know we've got a caller on the line waiting, but I want to give out the telephone number, 888-815-9756. Also, to let those of you know, in Alaska, if you're listening to the show, you can call me at my office, 800-872-8852, and then I'll be able to get in touch with you, whether you're in Fairbanks or you're in Anchorage or any other place in Alaska. If you wanted to have time with me while I'm up here for a private session, call again, 800-872-8852. And then in the Washington, the state of Washington area, there is a special appearance I'm going to be doing on November 21st called the Dickens Festival. And it's in downtown Tacoma. This is a wonderful family event, and it's for that Saturday, the 21st. Go into the Dickens Festival in Tacoma, Washington. Go to their website and just go type in Dickens Festival, Tacoma, Washington, and it'll pop up. And then know that I'll be doing an appearance at King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma. It's a very well-known bookstore. It's going to be part of this wonderful, wonderful walk and touch of fascinating history. People will be in costume. I will be in costume. So I hope you'll stop by and say hello. But the hours for me will be from 12 noon until 4. And they have all kinds of events going on. So go to their website, Dickens Festival, Tacoma, Washington, and you'll find out all of the details. Let's go to our caller who has been waiting very patiently. Welcome to the show, first name or initial. And where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Tina, and I'm calling from Pennsylvania.
Where in Pennsylvania, Tina?
Harrisburg.
All right. You're seeing the changing of the leaves, too.
Absolutely. Actually, we had a change earlier than normal this year.
Really? Well, I
yeah, our leaves, yeah, our leaves started to actually fall even alive off of the trees in early August.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's been really unusual. We had a very wet and rainy season, much cooler than our normal summer. And a lot of yellow in what should have been green foliage.
Well, Mother Nature, I always say whenever Mother Nature gets her idea of a good PMS attack, she's going to do it. She is someone she just really goes for it, and she said, surprise, surprise. You didn't know it was coming. Surprise, surprise. Well,
no,
Tina, let's get down to business with you.
Well, actually, I found you quite by accident. I was reading James Gillian's site and just playing around and got here and got to your program and felt like really moved to pick up the phone and call you.
Well,
and
I'm so
I'm
glad.
Just obeying my intuition.
Good. Well, Let me share with you what I'm perceiving. The first thing, Tina, is you need to keep up your writing. I'd like to see you have one of these handy-dandy little computer notebooks like students carry around that allows you to just, it doesn't weigh anything. You could tuck it in a briefcase and just ticky-tack away whenever you feel like it. You're a very, what I would call, a descriptive person when you write. You are a person that likes mysteries. You like finding out the dirt. That's how I'll describe it. You are not afraid of dealing with facts. You are someone that has a clarity with your thinking. You are no nonsense. You don't want to waste your time with people and or situations that you think are ridiculous or stupid. You are someone that has a very strong sense of ethic. You are a person that really is extremely hard on yourself when you become aware that you haven't, let's say, performed to the level of excellence that you want. Now, when I'm looking at this information that's being shown to me, I feel like you're preparing yourself for a major shift. I think you're going in for a brand new career. I think you are totally restructuring your life mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And when I'm watching this, I want you to be patient with yourself, because as you're going through this restructuring, you must be in tune with who you are, and you must allow that some of the things from the past that have helped you to become who you are at this time, that they can be released. You don't need to carry them as a burden. And I'm seeing this more as a mental burden. And it could have some emotional overlaps, but you're a very mental person. And I'm watching you, and I think one of the best ways, when you find you're really, 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 really stressed, and your brain, you just can't shift it from fourth gear, fifth gear, down into first. You need to do something creative. You need to do something with your hands. It can be making bread. It can be painting. But it's something you have to do physically. It could be scrubbing a floor, which I know would not be your first choice. But it's something that you have to do physically so that your hands and your body are active, but the mind is just sort of put into pause. And you just focus. And once you do that, then you get all your clarity back. It could be taking a walk around the block. So this is something for you, because you're so mental, that it's healthy, it's a good way to balance, it's a good way for you to be able to handle this energy sometimes that you get so frustrated because you're not able to channel it the way that you would like. Be patient, because you're doing this restructuring. So does this make sense to you, what I'm saying?
It does. It really does, and I appreciate your feedback and your guidance.
Well, I appreciate your calling in. I hope you'll visit the show more frequently.
I'm sure I will. Like I said, it was just something that happened, and so I felt inclined to follow through.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Thank you very much. Could I ask you a question? Like,
sure, go right ahead. We've got about two minutes.
All right. I have a situation where I went through a very painful divorce, and it felt like it was one big obstacle, and the heavens kind of opened for him in that he was able to take a good bit of our assets. And so I'm kind of left with some physical issues, and as you said, need to transition into some kind of work, even though my body's not in great shape. But there are indicators that if I possibly tried to reopen this legal situation, that there I might be able to reclaim some of what is mine. But I'm concerned that I might run into the same, like, obstacles all over again, because he's quite a formidable man. And I was wondering if you felt that I should just let go, or that I should try and go after what might be mine.
Well, if you have assets that are yours, period. How long were the two of you married?
Well, we were together 20 years, but the marriage was actually about 8.
All right. So you've got a number of variables here that would have to be dealt with. I would say that you have to ask yourself, one, how much do you think you would be getting out of this? Two, how much would actually be going to the attorneys and what would you be left over with? Three, would you be doing it so that you're wanting to have clarity and have total closure on this? Or is there something that's subliminal here working on you? Now, I know I'm out of time. This would take a lot more detail, but you need to think it through. Think it through.
Thank you.
And
I
think you'll be able to resolve this.
Okay. Well, you've been so gracious. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, Tina, and you've got a lot to look forward to, so go for it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You're welcome. Thank you, dear. This is Donna Siebel, my goodness, up here in Fairbanks, Alaska, and we're out of time, but I'll be back here same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com, station number one. Don't forget, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.